Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Oh, dear.
Going well already, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, I know.
If you're interested in becoming a manager, why not speak to my Neil? He can tell you all you need to know about becoming a manager, as he is a manager. He can advise you on management overalls, management willies, and the right management hand scrub to use to get the pig shit out from under your fingernails, because he's a manager. This is Dumpty Dum, sponsored by managers.
Dumpty 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 Dum, Dumpty Dumpty Dum Dum, Dumpty 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 Dum, Dumpty Diddly Dum, Dumpty Diddly Dumpty Diddly Dumpty Diddly Dum, Dumpty 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 Dum, Dumpty Diddly Dum. Bah. Sorry, that was really bad. But there you go. Bye.
Folks, it's the week of the Susan Slapdown. This is Dumpty Dum, the show about the reality docudrama that are centred on Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands on the productive working relationship that isn't Royfield Brown. And with me, I have to deliberately drop the yoghurt that is
Lucy Freeman.
And the last part of the Grundy Carter feud, folks, is you. Now, this week's Dumpty Dum is from Our Dusty Substances. And I think we'll probably retire it now. This is last week, Our Dusty. So, Lucy, somebody else would like to send us in a Dumpty Dum to take up from where Dusty left off. How can that be done?
If you would like to sing us a Dumpty Dum or leave us a plot prediction, then call us on 0203 031 3105 or leave us a message on SpeakPipe. Thanks to Cosmo for his podcast roundups, Shambridge for her brilliant voices, Mike Hatton for his character counts, and to Derek below the back bedroom. Derek is a little bit jealous of Shula going for ordination because he's always fancied it but could never get to grips with his canticles.
Yay. I don't get that joke, but I'm not classically educated, but well done. It was probably really quite funny. On this week's episode, we hear views from Catherine Rowan Jones. She's back. She's back. Jojo, someone in Canberra, Welsh Witch, Lydia, Library Lass, Vicky, Amy, and B12 Simon. But first, before all of that good stuff, folks, it's our Lucy and a week in Ambridge.
Bit of a patchwork of a week in Ambridge, really. Little bits of everything, like the kind of meals you eat when you've accidentally defrosted the freezer. Brian is still absolutely loving having more stuff to do. He's marching about moaning that everyone else is rubbish, doing wheelies in the tractor. No, wheelies. He's back. He had a little whinge that Jenny was on the computer for hours, but it's not surprising. She's updating her profile on boredgilfs.com. Over at Brookfield, Josh, always a soul of generosity, is allowing Adam to borrow his tractor, but the condition is that he has to drive it, rather like a small boy who says, "You may borrow my football, but only I am allowed to kick it." And their proposal for Ambridge's Got Talent, called Robots and That, has been shortlisted. Josh's fell at the first hurdle, largely because you don't need to be an entrepreneurial genius to realise that sell a load of rusty old shite was not going to be getting the thumbs up from Greta Thunberg. At Ambridge View, Emma was holed up in her room drinking olive oil with Tracy on her shed ed evening. "Do things you've never done before," urged Tracy, "like stop moaning." Alice and Krish set Kate and Yakult up on a date night at Hedges. I presume Ditches was shut. Alice sold it to Kate by saying, he saw you at Spiritual Home and wanted to meet up.
Really?
I think most people see Kate at Spiritual Home and think, there's a woman who needs a wash. Shula is still keen on vicaring. This isn't a hobby, Kent. It's my whole life, she insisted. I've never wanted to do anything else since last Wednesday. She went to see a man about it. I don't know who he was. I think he was God. God was a bit cross that A, Shula was a bit late, and B, reeked of buckfast, which isn't normally how people pitch up when they want to have a go at the vicaring. He said, why do you want to do it? And she said, well, I don't know, really. And he said, well, I never wanted to be God either. But, you know, it was either that or the Big Bang. And I had 7 days free, so I thought, oh, well, I'll have a bash. People still don't care about the Ambridge art, whatever it is. The only upshot so far has been that people dislike Freddie marginally more than they did before, and they keep bringing him empty plastic bottles, so he's becoming a one-man pollution crisis, which was hardly the point. In a bizarre series of events that have yet to be explained and in fact may never be, Oliver seems to have a mystifying fondness for Tracy Horobin, to the extent that she has now got the job as assistant receptionist at Gay Grables. I thought Freddie was going to be a shoo-in for the job, but maybe they were concerned he might introduce some of the practices from his last occupation. He'd be fine checking the guests in, but he would insist they checked all their personal belongings into a small box while he gave them a full body cavity search. Ooh. Jolene is back from her tour. Another one? I thought she'd already come back. Maybe this one was a comeback from the comeback. Kenton said proudly that she'd bought a bit of money in. How? She'll be getting 20 quid a night if she's lucky, and surely what it's costing her in elastoplast from the injuries dodging the thrown bottles would have cleaned her out. Papi has chicken pox, which William, with characteristic calm rationality, thought was sepsis. He's told Martin Gibson that he's not going back to work until Papi is better. He does know that could be weeks, right? 2 weeks of watching Peppa Pig mopping up Ribena off the sofa, saying, don't scratch, mopping up calamine lotion off the sofa, playing hungry hippos until the plastic lever snaps and everyone cries, mopping up Calpol off the sofa. Martin Gibson is not going to let him just take 2 weeks off on Peppa Pig leave, so he'll be fired, and then Emma will get to choose between two bankrupt Grundy brothers. Lucky girl. Aye. Clary and Susan are still at Daggers Drawn in the dairy. Susan ended up with 3 pints of raspberry full fat down her Polly cotton slacks, and then they both got stuck in the doorway trying to be the first one to report each other to Helen, who was in the office staring out of the window thinking about this really weird dream she'd had that she'd been involved with a karate instructor who'd spontaneously combusted. Susan is fizzing away quietly. You can hear the sparks crackling out of her ears if you listen hard enough. She's like a firework that you're not sure has finished or is going to go off again. So everyone skirts around it until someone brave goes and kicks it, whereupon it flares up and burns the shed down. Yep, you can take the girl out of the horror bins, but you're never going to take the horror bin out of the girl. And sooner or later, there's going to be a scene where Susan's got Clary by the hair against the crisp carousel in the shop with Neil shouting, leave it, Susan, she ain't worth it. And Eddie holds the coats. You mark my words. The end.
Oh, that was so brusque this week. You delivered that at such a clip, Lucy.
Did I? Yeah, but do you know, this week was really different. Last week, I thought, oh my God, there's nothing to write about because it was all Jimus stuff and it was all Ed and Emma, which was all quite gloomy. And I thought there's going to be nothing to write. And I wrote loads. And this week, it was all nice and nice-ish and jolly-ish. Mm. And it was really hard. So there we go. Who knows?
I thought you'd have made more of the Susan Carter slap down.
Well, because I thought everyone would talk about that.
Okay. All right.
Do you mean the Neils one?
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
And, you know, I thought Jazza and showing pure emotion.
I loved that.
Yeah.
But you can't make jokes about that.
No. But you could have touched on it poignantly. But anyway, listen, I'm not telling you how to do your monologues, Lucy. You've been doing them for 5 years and you're doing awesome jobs. So don't listen to me. It sounds like I'm telling you how to do your job. You know, there's people all across the planet going, what the fuck's he on about? Shut up, man. Know your place. You link from one Lucy gag to another. That's your job, Royfield. So I must admit, Lucy, I'm quite liking the God talk.
Yeah.
I think it adds a layer of depth to obviously to Shula, but also to the whole proceedings. I actually like it. It's a change of pace. It's I like it. I don't want there to be too much of it. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying let's have more ordination chat thrown at the archers, but I must admit I like it.
I didn't know anything about how it all happened, so I'm finding it quite interesting from a, oh, this is a new thing to know about sort of way.
Yeah.
And it's not too goddy. She hasn't had a Damascene conversion or anything,
exactly.
Has she? It's just kind of,
it feels
she said it's part
organic.
Of my life and it's where I feel at home.
And actually, Shula is a good listener. She is. She was.
Which I thought she handled. I thought she handled Jazza really, really well.
She did.
She was very calm, very assertive, very comforting, and and she didn't beat about the bush when he said. He said, "You're not going to give me those addresses, are you?" And she said, "No, I'm not." Just really calmly and nicely, and he knew that. And then she said, "But I don't. Do you still want me to?" And he said, "No."
Yeah.
And I thought that was lovely, really, really good. But I don't know where all of a sudden where this empathy is suddenly coming from, because she's never shown any before.
Well, no,
when you remember
how
she treated Elizabeth after the abortion, and but then nobody's perfect, are they? You don't go into the church because you're already,
saint.
You're already there. You go because, you're on your journey and you want, I don't know, what am I talking
but
about?
What I've always been told about Christianity, about any kind of religion, is you have to have a certain element of doubt about yourself. And that is what actually makes you humble.
Yes.
As opposed to you come in, perfectly formed.
Yeah.
So that's the difference between Shula being able to connect with people and to listen, and Kate Aldridge, who says she's spiritual and has the world's worries, on her mind all the time, but she has all the answers.
Yeah.
Fundamentally, that is the difference between the two. And I'm finding it fascinating to listen to, and I'm loving it. Don't want too much more, but I love it when she's talking to the Bish and it's a change of pace and it feels like she is in a psychiatrist's chair. I love that. It's very good. So Kate and Yakult, you enjoying all of that?
I do think it's absolutely nuts. I can't see what the hell the attraction is there for either of them.
Well, I'm presuming, if nothing else, it's just physical and we can't see that because it's on the radio.
But I never imagined Kate as terrifically attractive.
Oh, I don't know.
Or Yakult. Because if somebody's that pedantic, is that kind of cold... You wouldn't fancy, I wouldn't fancy him. I mean, you can't fancy, if somebody's, like, it doesn't, to me anyway, it doesn't matter. I don't know whether I'm sounding like an old hippie or something, but if somebody's terrifically good looking, unless they've got a sort of a warmth about them, it doesn't matter how good looking they are. It's like an oil painting. You're not going to fancy them, but it's if they've got a nice, way with them. That's what makes you fancy them.
There's two ways for someone to get into your heart, isn't there? There is just the initial wrapping that they come in and you go,
I don't think it's his heart she's trying to get into, but...
Well, he's
lower down
by the sound of things.
Yeah.
It's his wallet, which is in his back pocket. Yeah, below.
I mean, the sparring and everything is quite...
Well, that was good. And actually, it showed that Yakult is a little bit more on it. So he isn't totally cold and detached, and his detachment means that he can analyze Kate very quickly and says, you're out for everything you can get, etc., etc. But he could keep up. And the thing with people who are, on the spectrum, slightly on that spectrum, they don't do bants, but he was doing bants. So I don't know how much of this was utterly true to life with somebody who is on the spectrum. People who are slightly on the...
But who's decided that he is?
He is.
Did we decide
that? Come on.
Okay.
Because he's very literal about things. He's very literal. He can't see shades of grey. That conversation with Kate was a shades of grey conversation.
But then would he have read into, when she said extra things, mm. services, would he then have got the nuance of that if he was unable to see nuance?
Well, this is all somewhat difficult, and neither of us are experts in this field. But I'm presuming that because, you know, in his head, he knows that massage parlors that offer extras means sex. So he just says,
right?
He did say,
okay.
It, you know, if this is the way that, you know, people will take it. So again, he's proving that he's somewhat, not quite self-aware, that's not quite the expression I'm searching for, but aware that the inference is this. I don't think that it's this, but isn't this really, really bad? Because that's really what other people are going to be saying, which is actually, when you think about it, quite a sophisticated spin on it, you know. But I like it. I kind of like them together. It doesn't make any sense for me. And you've got to think that lots of hilarity will ensue because he is Mr. Literal and she is just oblivious to her own narcissism. And there'll be
a
comedy couple.
Well, I loved it when she said, I'm looking after my elderly grandmother. As if she was, you know, bloody Mother Teresa. She was doing Peggy some enormous favour, you know, and actually just literally nobody else would have her.
Was good, yeah.
And the thing is with Kate, she's completely convinced herself. It doesn't matter whether anyone else believes her. She thinks that's true, so yeah. Mm. I've just seen something, by the way. Didn't Witherspoon send us a 3 minutes call, he said?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Oh, have you got that?
Yes, I do.
Oh, okay, fine. Sorry.
Yeah.
That's just messed up the edit, hasn't it? Ha! Sorry.
Well, it's all fine, Witherspoon. Your call made it in. Unedited, unabridged. So don't worry. Right, I tell you what, because we've got a ton of calls, let's have a little bit of this. Oh, that's loud.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
And let's start in the lower Upper East Side. It's Witherspoon.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Toss salads and scrambled eggs. Mercy.
Greetings, Lucy, Royfield, Millie Bell, and all dumpty-dummers around the world. It's Witherspoon and Angus Haggis here. First, a quick word about the final scene of the week between Neil and Susan.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was one of the most authentically written conflicts between two characters I've heard on The Archers. So hats off to the scriptwriter. Now, on to Jim. Jazzer has screwed up, and perhaps he has secrets to reveal. Jim's story is resonating for many people. I'm going to take a minute to read a page from a memoir whose author went through something a bit different from Jim, but whose reactions were very similar. The memoir is called Bettyville, was published 4 years ago, and was written by George Hodgman, a well-respected book editor and writer, and a friend of a friend. It was very well reviewed and was a big seller. George talks about returning from New York City to a small hometown in Missouri to take care of his aging and ailing mother and to confront the demons of growing up as an artistic, closeted gay youth in rural America in the 1970s, who never uttered the phrase, "I am gay," to his parents until he was 40. They did not directly address the subject again. George and his family were keepers of secrets. To preface what I'm going to read, George's mother has made him try out for the high school football team, and he is bullied and harassed by one member of the team during the first 2 days of practice. George never returns. On the football field, I thought I was going to cry, but I told myself that whatever came, whatever happened, I could not do that. Not there. I didn't. I swallowed my tears. I pulled them in, and they never came back. I cannot cry. Not since that day, not ever. Where do the hidden things go? Not away, nothing goes away. I think something happened at that moment on the field, Something shut down, something went into hiding, split off. Although it did not become clear for years, I suspect from the minute I had that little break from myself, some part of me went inside and I began to watch myself, making certain to give nothing away. I don't think a coming together will happen to me in this lifetime. I am not sure I will ever again connect up the watcher and the other unfiltered part of me in the way other people do. There has been a rupture, and here in this house, on these days, when the sounds my mother makes seems especially loud, I feel it. See the cost of long-lasting silences. The coda to this story is that George battled various addictions for many years, and last month committed suicide.
Oh.
The loss to his friends and to the literary and publishing communities has been great. Talk to you soon.
Oh, gosh. Wow. God, to just say, I'm going to control that part of myself. I'm going to control myself to such an extent that I'm not going to let any emotion show, and I am never going to. That is amazing and terrifying. Because what does that do to you? What does that do to your brain? What does it do to your physical self and everything?
Well,
gosh,
exactly. The pressure wrought emotionally and psychologically is too much, and that's the reason why he had to end his life. You know, we all need that pressure cooker valve to let off so that we can reveal truly how we are feeling, but also to have other people to accept our true self and our innermost emotions. You know, without it, we just can't cope.
Do you think Jazza should have done what he did?
I think it's less about him doing that. Jazza is the pressure cooker, and well, so is Jim. So is Alistair. This is the reason why it's so fascinating, this. In the cold light of day, a heinous crime has been committed.
Mm-hmm.
And we are taught as good members of society when a crime is being committed to report the crime. That's what fundamentally what we're taught. But there are caveats to that, you know. And there are so many caveats to this crime, not only just the fact, and one of the large caveats to this is the fact that it happened, though it's never been explicitly said, so long ago. So there was, Shula did say, the old man in the wheelchair. So there is a tacit, you know, it's implied that, is this even, God, I'm going to say moral thing to do, because this is the reason why this is such a fascinating case. At the end of the day, Jim has managed to cope with this to a fashion and to operate as a human being, to bring up a family, to have a profession which he loves and adored, and also to have a wife. Jim has managed to cope to a fashion. What it's meant, the fallout for Jim is obviously that he hasn't been able to have the depth of emotional relationships with people who are close to him. But he's managed to cope to a fashion. And he's quite clear that he doesn't want anybody else to know about this. So even though this terrible crime is being committed, Jim's needs, wants are paramount to justice in the classic sense being served on this paedophile. But if this had happened last year, 10 years ago, possibly even 20 years ago, I think, because you wouldn't know exactly how the victim was going to cope with this for the rest of their life, but then also because the predator is going to be younger and probably still sexually active, you've got to then report it regardless. But when it's somebody who's 90 in a wheelchair,
yeah,
who you got to presume can't be doing this now, and more importantly, the victim has led a life and has clearly said no, I think then you don't report it. But it's absolutely fascinating. And you put your finger on it weeks ago and said, you know, Jazza has a different view of justice, and it's like you go around and clock the person. Mm. And
but he's given Jazza a life. Horrible man has given Jimus a life sentence, hasn't he?
Yeah.
He's justified, presumably he's justified whatever he's done, as you know, paedophiles do to himself, and has got on. And it has had a detrimental effect on Jim's emotional life, his marriage, his relationship with his children, their own relationships on from that. You know, he's not just hurt Jimus, he's hurt everybody around him. And, you know, regardless of him being in a wheelchair, regardless of him being old, and regardless of him not being physically able to do it anymore, he still deserves punishment, or he deserves to be told your version of the truth is not the truth. That is not, you know, this person was, this child was not a willing participant, was not, this was abuse. This was not a relationship. Mm. This was not friendship. This was not whatever.
Mm.
I don't know what Shula was doing when she said the old man in the wheelchair. I liked the rest of that scene, but that bit really clanged for me because I thought, what's she saying? That, oh, well, if you're in a wheelchair, you know, it's too late now.
It could have just been, it could have just actually
she's just checking, she's talking about the right.
Exactly. It could have actually been
but
that.
But Jazza was sensitive to that because immediately he said, don't start that, don't say that.
Mm.
You know.
I think it's a fascinating moral conundrum. Mm. It really is. Because if that person was 60 in the wheelchair, was 60 and younger, I, and this is not to absolve people who are old from committing a heinous crime, but it's also Jim. That's the thing, you know, as members of society, we should report crimes committed against us, not only because a crime is being committed, but also to prevent that crime being perpetrated on others, to let that victim get away with it, and for them to think, well, my behaviour, as abhorrent as it is, doesn't matter because I can just do this with impunity.
Yeah.
So if this person was 60 and younger, I would actually say, Jim, whatevs, I'm doing this. But there is, but I hate myself for this. But I just think it's such an amazing moral conundrum. The age, I think, does matter. It shouldn't, but I think it does matter.
Really?
But it shouldn't. I think it does lose because, and it's not just because this person cannot commit the crime, but that is an element of it. There's so many different facets to this. But as I said before, with my initial point, Jim has led a life. If this paedophile had done this yesterday, last year, 10 years ago, and the victim was 18, you don't know how they're like. It's a horrible thing, Luke. It's horrible, horrible, horrible. But Jim saying, I do not want to pursue this, for me, tips the balance because of the, and I use this word advisably, the supposed impotence in terms of the venality and the criminality that cripple paedophile can wreck, wrought, bring to anybody else. Because of Jim saying no. There's so many elements to this, and I'm putting the fundamentally two large elements together, and I'm saying Jim wins out. If Jim was 40 saying this, I'd say no, because a paedophile is only about 10 years older than Jim, isn't he? So I'd say no. But when he's 19 in a wheelchair, I would say, Jim, if you don't want to pursue it. But I'm not comfortable with this.
But I suppose you have... The person's trust has already been breached by the abuser. Mm. And him saying, I do not want to take this further, and Jazza ignoring that and carrying on, is another breach of trust, isn't it? So you're just compounding what's already happened, I suppose.
But it's the far lesser of all evils. Because, as I said, one of my initial points is, as responsible citizens, we should report crime when we see them, with certain caveats. You know, if it's some 11-year-old kid who's doing some minor infraction, technically it's a crime and whatever, throwing a stone through a window, you might take a view and go, well, I know that little Johnny has been through a tough time because their parents have separated and whatever, I'll have a word, as opposed to running around to the cop shop. Yeah. You know, so there are caveats. But
then you look at what Susan's trying to do with Ed. Ed made a mistake, and she is trying to allow that mistake because it had an impact on her, like a verb. How could I do that? It had an impact on somebody she cares about, so she's now being incredibly
vindictive.
That's
different, because it's Susan is being vindictive, full stop. You know, this isn't I am a good citizen and this needs to be reported upon at all. This is just pure spite. And that's one of the reasons why the scene with Neil was so amazing.
Yeah.
And you listen to the voice acting that goes on between them pair. That's another league. That's Premier League stuff. Yeah. Premier League stuff. You felt Neil bristle.
I know, his voice suddenly went all like that, didn't it? Yeah. And he's never done that, but I was like, woohoo, Neil.
Yeah, and I think like he pulled her back and Susan said, get your hands off me and whatever. And what are you doing? Oh my God, loose.
Yeah.
That was the schnizzle. That's what we listen to this thing for. And Charlotte, who plays Susan, talks about how good her radio husband is. And he doesn't get the plaudits. We all love Neil.
But he
flies kind of under the radar.
Yeah.
It's a bit like Robert Snell. Like, we all go, love him. But when you think favourite actor...
No idea.
We don't put him up. It's always your Lillians and stuff that kind of get thrown up there. But this was otherworld stuff. Great acting, amazing delivery.
Yeah.
And that slapdown was just... It was years upon years. To be fair to the character of Neil, he does frequently say, Susan, rein your horses. He does.
Yeah.
It hasn't been 40 years in the making, like he's never said this before.
But I thought it was interesting that when she was banging on about Clary, she's got him sorted out. You won't believe it. He's got another job. She sorted that out. And he said something sort of gentler about Clary. She said, you know why I'm so angry. And it's because Clary brought up the jail sentence. Mm. And Clary crossed a line. She crossed Susan's idea of Susan. And Clary shone the light on that and said, everybody knows what you did. You cannot hide that from us. And that's what she couldn't bear, having that kind of made.
But there is another public. There is another element which I thought to Susan just feeling so angry is because she feels impotent, and so Neil,
and she's jealous as well because she desperately wants to be involved with Emma and know what's happening, and her sister, who she continually looks down upon, seems to be getting it right, and Susan's getting it wrong, and she can't bear it.
And also, that in her simplistic view of the whole situation, Ed's family have helped him. He's got a job.
Yeah.
Whereas she has not been able to help her daughter.
Yeah.
That bristled with her.
Yeah.
They've helped, look what they've done.
Yeah.
And she can't. It was just great. Utterly great. All right. So that's that. Now let's have a little bit. Oh, this is my new favourite listener, and I'll tell you the reason why after.
Hi, Lucy, Royfield, and everyone in Dumpty Dum land. My name is Lydia Edwards. I'm How to Read Address on the Twitters and on Instagram, which is where I mostly hang out. I'm a Brit living in Perth, Australia for the last nearly 8 years. I'm a first-time caller-innerer, but I did send a Dumpty Dum with my daughter back in March, and she was the one that exercised considerable lung power shouting "Dum" at the end. I'm a fashion historian, a lecturer, and an author. So if you ever need any Archers-related fashion history advice, I'm your girl. I'm not sure how that will ever be relevant, but you never know.
Tabards!
I grew up to the strains of Barrett Green thanks to my mum, though I'm now a bigger fan than she is. And as Lucy has said, you know, the Archers is such a cosy world you can escape to and not have to do anything about anyone there or anything that's going on. You just sit back and lose yourself in the narratives, and I appreciate having that in my life. The same is true with Dumpty Dum, which is a huge source of comfort and joy to me. The first storyline I really remember was Ruth with Sam, but I started listening of my own volition in around 2004 to 2005, around the time that Jack Woolley was getting increasingly unwell. So according to your timeline, that makes me a George Grundy, I think. I don't have time to add tons more, but I will say that I agree Joe's death will probably be the catalyst that brings Susan and Clary back together, possibly Ed and Emma. But before that happens, I suspect that Will and Emma might have a cheeky snog in the heat of the moment and then both regret it. So, yes. It'd be interesting to see how all that plays out. It's certainly been really compelling and quite upsetting listening over the last couple of weeks as they've lost the house. Okay, I'm running out of time, so I will say goodbye. Thanks. Keep up the great work.
Bye. She's gone.
Yeah, she has gone. But she's all over the Twitter. She's all over social media with her in her Dumby Dum t-shirt.
I know. I saw her.
Yeah. And she did all the graphics on it as well. She whacked it on her Insta. She's looking wonderful. So thank you for that, Lydia Edwards. And thanks for bigging us up. All over the socials by showing us your Dumpty Dum apparel.
And I also think a history with the tabard, Lydia. That's what we need some sort of dissertation on with the tabard. Please, thank you.
Yeah, right. Now, from a new favourite of mine to an old favourite of mine is Catherine Rowan-Jones.
Good evening, Dumpty Dummers worldwide. It's Catherine Rowan-Jones calling in from High Wycombe at 88 Ivy Fox on the Twitters. There's been radio silence on my part for some time, partly because I haven't had a great deal, I feel, contributes to the discussion, and also because I've been fighting with my fucking browsers to be allowed to use my own bleeding microphone. Life in it. So it's been a particularly well-written week, I think, this week in Ambridge. Nick Warburton's got quite a rep for radio drama, and he specialises in religious radio drama, so I guess he's the go-to guy when they're moving St. Shula, the vicar-to-be storyline forward. Jazza is demonstrating, the actor who plays Jazza is demonstrating his emotional capability. Poor little bugger was in tears with St. Shula because he's so worried about his mate Jim. So, yeah, that's moving along nicely. Friday night, that was just perfect. That roar from Neil Carter, that's been building up for decades. It came right up from his toes all the way out, calling his wife out for what she really is, a gossip. And she does need to take a good hard look at herself. As a bystander, we can enjoy Susan's gossiping, but it's gradually built up and up and up until now she's a control freak who has to know the ins and outs of a mouse's fucking arsehole. So, love you all. Thank you for everything you do. Hope to catch up with you soon. And mind the point of shies. Hurrah. Jones out.
Hey, bye. Well done, Jones.
Can I just talk about Nick Warburton for a minute?
Go on.
Because he's one of my heroes. He is one of my writing heroes. He is amazing. And he wrote, and I've banged on about this before, he wrote a fantastic series called On Mardle Fen, which features as the lead character the actor that plays Jimus. And it's the two, Nick Warburton's writing suits the actor that plays Jimmer so beautifully. It's just a wonderful series. And if you want to make yourself happy, it's magical, it's funny, and it's dramatic, and it's a little bit creepy. And I think Yokel Bear in particular would really like it. I think you can get it as a download, as an audio book, but just on BBC Sounds, if it's bloody working, but just get it. It's called On Mardle Fen. It's absolutely wonderful.
Mm.
The end.
All right. Well, that's a recommendation indeed, folks. From me, you get what Marvel film you should go and watch. But from Lucy, you get Nick Warburton, a man who has won the Tinniswood Award and the Stanford St. Martin Trust Radio Premier Award, somebody who is utterly renowned for doing great BBC Radio 4 afternoon plays and even has done a little bit of work on Holby City. But On Mardle Fen is definitely one of his standout accomplishments to do with his work. So, yeah. So that's that. That's Catherine Rowan-Jones. That's Lucy banging on about Nick Warburton. And now I believe this person is Singer.
Hi, Singer from Canberra in Australia. Yokel Bear has read out a few of my posts on social media, so I thought the obvious next step was to become a caller in or out. My Archer's vintage is Natasha. I started listening seriously around the start of the year. My first storyline was Home Farm being sold. My friend Nick has been working on me for about 5 years to get me into the Archers. He tried really hard. On my yearly visits to the UK, we'd listen to the omnibus on Sunday mornings. He'd try and explain what was going on. Finally, he lent me a dictionary, which really helped. And I'm enjoying it so much, I got my twin sister, Anitra, into it as well. And now we have a little text group to talk about the episodes. Does anyone else do that with their friends or family?
Yes.
We love gossiping about the village and judging everyone, of course. So I guess I'm here, so I should do some plot predictions. I think jealousy will get Ed and Emma back together again. I think thinking Emma and Will are going to get back together will make Ed realise what he really wants. Of course, it's the Archers, so there'll be some sort of mix-up that will delay the reunion. Probably Ed will think Emma and Will are really together when they aren't, or something like that. We're also wondering, why haven't we heard from Tom and Natasha? Maybe they're in Cuba racking up a huge credit card debt. Love the show. Of course, my 17-year-old thinks the only thing sadder than listening to the Archers is listening to a show about the Archers. Yeah. In fact, I became a Patreon because I love what you do so much. So keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. All 17-year-olds are wrong about everything. Don't listen to them.
What about Greta Thunberg?
No, all right, shit, apart from her, all the others. But that's why everyone notices her, because she's the only one that's not wrong about everything.
All right.
Do you know what? My daughter's just started her first job today.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a lifeguard. Ooh. At a local leisure centre.
Mm-hmm.
And she came home and said, being my daughter, she didn't tell me anything sensible about what had happened. She just told me all the funny stories. And she said, I know all the alarm messages. She said, it's we have to say, Mr. Waters to reception if there's something wrong in the pool.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to say, what is it? Mr. Waters, smoke something if it's something to do if there's the fire alarm going off and whatever else. And then I said and then she said, and then someone pooed in the pool. And what? I said, I said, someone pooed in the pool, a kid pooed in the swimming pool. And I said, what's the alarm call for that? She said, I just rang George and said, George, someone shat in the pool. I was like, Mr. Pooh to reception, please, Mr. Pooh.
There's a little bit of a dum-de-dum newsflash. We should have an obits section. Message from Auntie Jean. I'm afraid, dum-de-dum, dum-de-dogs are down by one tonight. My little bee has passed away. There's a lovely photograph of Bee. Looks like she's kind of on the bed there somewhere, kind of looking thoughtfully into the distance, and obviously she's passed away. So,
I'm sorry, Auntie Jean.
Sorry to hear that, Auntie Jean.
Oh.
but and she's getting lots of support on the Twitters as we speak. So that's hot off the press, folks. So give her lots of love on the Flick app or on the Twitters. Utter kind of foundational member of our community is Auntie Jean.
Yeah.
You know, one thing that I've realised in the last... It's really hit me in the last month, Lucy.
What?
That actually I'm going to get a dog.
Yeah.
I need to be properly situated in my own place.
Because
I am at the moment is I've got a room in a house over here. So when I'm properly situated, I will. And then also when I sort out, when I get my visa so I don't have to leave the States, which hopefully should come through in a couple of months. So by the end of the year, I'm going to get myself a pooch. So I will need tips, hints and tips from you and other Dumpty Dummers as to what type of pooch I should get so we can be great pals and muckers and go on adventures. And it'll help trim my belly as well, because that's got out of all proportion, Lucy. I've become a Tubberlump again, and it's just not good.
That's the name of your dog, Tubberlump.
That actually, what a great name.
Yeah. I think if it's a boy dog, you should call it Derek Fletcher. And if it's a girl dog, you should call it Sabrina Thwaite. It's got to have a surname as well.
I met
two spaniels the other day called Jerry Springer and Joe Cocker.
That's clever.
Good, isn't it?
Good heavens. Sometimes people are so clever. Right. let's just hold the dog talk for now, because we've got a load of calls, and now it's Jojo, and I believe she has a pair of sexy heels.
Hi there, Dumpty Dummers. It's Jojo Sexy Heels here. Just had to call in Tracy Holobin this week. Magnificent. Just love her. I'm sure lots of others have called in to say the same thing, and I did put a plot prediction on to the Twitters yesterday. I predict that the leading female part in the Christmas production by IndieBots will of course be played by Tracy, because by then these two strong, fiercely loyal women will be best of buddies, in the same way that it was an unlikely friendship between Jazza and Jim. Second thing I just wanted to comment on was, as soon as David said that he loved Dr. Feelgood, I thought, oh my God, David Archer, I just love you just that little bit more. Really and truly, what better song to typify the Archers than Milk and Alcohol? Sorry, guys, can't go through the lyrics, but Milk and Alcohol, it's what the Archers is all about. Anyway, I've got to go and get in the pool. It's too hot here in sunny Spain. Bye for now.
Nice. Just thinking about how nice it would be to be in Spain, because I'm currently wearing a long sleeve top and a sweatshirt because it's bloody freezing. But anyway.
But Lucy, it's August, so it's the British summertime. How is that even possible?
Which is why I'm wearing a long sleeve top and a hoodie.
I must admit that Milk and Alcohol is just one of those songs which just reminds me of being in junior school and Peter Willis just like being unruly, kind of headbutting people. It's one of those kind of like aggressive, kind of like boys' songs. Lots of stomping used to go around when that came on.
I don't think I've ever heard it.
Oh, come on. You know it. Got in all milk and alcohol. That one.
Nope. Never heard of it.
Dr. Feelgood, it's a bit, so I think they're one-hit wonders. So there's this big hit from 1979, that Garden Oil Milk and Alcohol. And then it's an album by Motley Crue. So it's actually not the easiest thing on the planet to go and Google. But I knew the song that she was talking about, but I didn't know they're actually called Dr. Feelgood. But anyway, the world was black and white with shades of brown back then, because it's 1979 and Thatch had just come into power. So it was the end of civilization as we know it. Moving swiftly on, no politics here. It's Welsh Witch.
Hi, Dumpty Dum. It's Welsh Witch here. Just wanted to say, after Friday's episode, go Neil, go Neil, go Neil. There, that's it. Hope everybody's well. Bye.
Oh, that was short.
I think
and sweet.
A lot of people felt when Catherine said, you know, that it came up out of his toes. It really did. It was. I've only heard him do that very, very few times. Mostly the most you get from Neil is a sort of a, well, you know, Neil's famous groaning noise, and that's about it. But to hear him be that kind of just determined and physical and absolutely certain that she was about to do the wrong thing, something she would regret, something he would regret. You know, it was really, really powerful. And I think, you know, a lot of us, when we've heard Neil in the past, where Susan said, "Why don't you do something, Neil?" And he goes, "Oh," and we all, or she's rude to him or horrible. And we all sort of think, "Oh, Neil, for God's sake, stand up for yourself." So when he does, it's really shocking and really sort of, quite thrilling, really.
Mm. True that, Luce. True that. Just before I forget, now, last week's show went beyond the pale for some listeners. There was the patriarchy had come and landed in the middle of the Dumpty Dum podcast and was throwing its weight around and was being all sexist and horrible. All right, now.
Oh, you with the topless calendar, you mean?
Well, yeah, right. But let's...
Okay, I have to say, hang on a minute, guys. Luke. I have to say, there's no way that if I really thought that, A, it was likely to happen in the slightest, or B, that Royfield would, you know, hold me to it, or it was anything other than a total joke, then I wouldn't have done it. And I wouldn't have gone along with it and laughed and whatever else. And we do both have, yeah. Although we tease each other, we do have massive respect for each other, and we don't kind of, we yeah, wouldn't Lucy, tease each other past a point of whatever.
Lucy. What? The whole point was we need to get to the top of the iTunes podcast charts for TV yeah. and media.
Okay. We should still do that.
Luce. What? We zoomed up to number 13.
Really?
Yes. Now,
no way.
We've fallen back a little now.
Okay.
Right?
Where are we now? 152.
We're on to something, Lucy. We're on to something.
Okay. Ladies and the gay gentlemen of the Twitters, of the Dumpty Dums, should we get into number one? Royfield will do a nude
I will.
Calendar. Yes. I will. Bottomless, topless, hairless, backless, everything else.
But Lucy, we're a team.
Yeah.
We joined at the hip, so to speak. So, oh.
I'm not doing that.
Oh, yeah. I just realised. Oh, dear.
Run around there, Mush.
But, you know, we are a team. And on the Twitters, because it was Witherspoon that had to remind people on social media that actually this is an old idea off the back of
The Calendar Girls,
yeah, which yeah. was done about 3 years ago, that actually we said we were going to do this. And for whatever reason, oh, I know, it was because Paul Truman did, because we were going to raise money, and then Paul Truman came along with his fantastic effort, and then we just kind of fell by the wayside, because it felt like we were just like latching on, even though we kind of had the idea before he did his kind of great fundraising effort for you know, coercive control and whatever, blah, blah, blah. So yeah. anyway. So Witherspoon is there on the Twitter saying, actually, this is an old idea and I was totally up for it and et cetera, et cetera. So, folks, I'm just saying, a whole load of reviews have come in since last Thursday. For that week's episode, zoomed up as high as number 13 in the UK's TV and media download chart. So,
shame, Nora.
If we keep doing this, if you keep doing this, i.e. writing reviews, right, you might get more than you bargained for.
You'll really wish you hadn't. Yeah.
Well, and talking about getting more than you bargained for, it'd be remiss of me not to mention the Dum-de-Dum Awards and live show, which will happen on November the 9th in Birmingham, my hometown. You've got to go onto dumdedum.com, go click on the first thing that you see, top left on the homepage, and it will take you through to the town hall's website in Brum, and you can go book your tickets, or you can just bypass all that by typing in these words, Dum-de-Dum Awards Birmingham, November the 9th, into any browser that you care to have on your electronic device, and it will take you through to the council's website. You go book your tickets. Now, I've had a couple of interesting conversations with people saying, oi, dude, what is going on? What else is going on that weekend? Now, when I did this last year, I did a whole load of events. You go along to the BBC studios and have an Archers tour. There was a canal side walk. There was a meal. There was all manner of things. I ain't doing all that this time. Quite simply, because I'm more busier than a busy person right here and now. However, the studio tour, I would have done that because quite simply, I just got to coordinate that with the BBC, but they've got no spaces. There's no spaces for whether it's an Archers tour or a BBC studio tour. So that's the reason why there isn't that. However, if enough people email me, I will do this. I'll book us somewhere to have something to eat because I know some people are going to be traveling from around the UK and actually will be booking Airbnbs. So we'll book us somewhere to eat. And then if there's enough people that, you know, apply the pressure, we'll all go off somewhere and maybe shake a leg afterwards. Of which somebody came up with a great suggestion on the Flick app of, well, why don't we like go out? I believe the expression they used, Lucy, was boogieing, but go out boogieing down to the gay village in Birmingham, just like Adam and his better half. So that would be a very Archer's way to end the night. So if you want some afters, some extras after Dum-de-Dum live in Brum, tweet me, email me, and I might reluctantly, with a bit of a wry grin, organise some afters. So that's that. So November the 9th, want to see you there. It'll be us and at the moment Susie Rids, but we're hoping that one or two other, Susie Rids plays our Tracy Horribin, one or two other Archers actors, alumni will also be there. And actually, you know who's going to be helping us hand out the awards, Lucy?
No. Angela Barnes. Yeah. It's her birthday.
Angela Barnes and Tracy Horribin. So we're interviewing Susie Rids as part of the show, but then Tracy Horribin will actually be there to hand out awards, which I just think, what a massive coup. The woman of the moment in Ambridge. Right, so we've done Well Switch. Now it's time for Library Lass.
Hello, Dum-de-Dum. This is Library Lass, and I'm a first-time caller-innerer. I work in a library, appropriately. And I've been listening to The Archers since the death of Mark Hebden. I've got a plot prediction. Emma receives a text from George asking her to meet him at the pole barn. And there she finds he's got Bartleby in the trap, loaded up with all the stuff he's stolen over the years. So they go into town and he gets Emma to go to the pawn shop with the jewellery, laptops and church silver and get cash for that. and then they drive on to the building society to deposit the full cost of the house, which, of course, Emma happily moves into. And this just proves that George is his father's son, as this will prevent his mum and uncle slash stepdad Ed ever getting together again.
Oh.
What the hell has happened to, because we all know that Georgie is a wrong'un, and you know, he nicked that money and blamed Alf and all that, or Alf took the blame. But that, has that storyline died? Are we ever coming back to it, or what?
No, it's just it's a recurring thing, isn't it, that we know that he's going to grow up to be some miscreant, that he's going to be George will come into his... How old is George supposed to be? About 13? Something
like
that,
I think so, yeah.
So we're maybe about a year away, possibly two, from hearing him being voiced by an actor.
Okay, right.
Aren't we? Then we're just going to go, oh, God, no.
And the way things are going, it'll be a Geordie, judging by the accents already in that family.
Didn't it? What did he do with... Didn't he do something with an animal? Something unspeakable? Am
did
I getting
he?
This? Oh, no.
I think that was a dream, Royfield. I don't remember George doing anything unspeakable to an animal.
I think that'd be a nightmare. But he did. There was something about the church and George about 4 years ago. There's somebody out there going, you misconstrued this, Mr. Brown, but actually what you mean is this, when he did blip. Because everybody was saying that he was Damien. There was something kind of churchy.
He pinched the church roof fund.
No, it's not just theft. It was something which is like, you're a bit twisted, mate.
Really?
Which he did.
Golly, I don't remember that.
Anyway, I don't know. Cosmo, come on, put me right. That's Welsh Witch Library Lass. Now, here we have, I believe this person is also a first-time caller in a row.
Hello, Roryfield and Lucy. It's MA here in beautiful Owen Sound, Ontario. I'm a first-time caller in a row, so here are my stats. I started listening in late 2017 or early 2018, so I think I'm either a Johnny, he was a noob in the first back episodes I listened to, or I'm a Rosie Archer, who was the first to appear after I started listening.
Ah.
The first storyline that I can recall was that of Johnny arriving at Brookfield and trying to find a place with his estranged family. So, what made me feel the need to overcome my nerves and call in? Shula. I just feel that the whole Shula becoming a vicar thing is amazing. Just imagine, all it's taken to reverse her realization that she shouldn't do it was a bit of listening and nudging she did with Jim and Alistair. As others have said before, it was just normal niceness. And never mind that, though she was well-intentioned, she could have done loads better by, say, not being such a nosy Parker about it all. It's totally possible to be a rock of support for someone without pumping them for information that they don't want to share.
Mm.
But on top of all of that, the job of vicar requires someone who is very skilled at de-escalating community rifts and building bridges between people with diverse views. How could she not realize that her miserable failure at bringing people together on the art project committee is a pretty good indication that she's just not cut out for the job? Even I could have done better than she did, and I don't think of myself as vicar material. Okay, I'm an atheist, but you get what I mean. Anyhow, thank you two so much for the podcast. I eat it up every week and feel a bit sad when it's over. Bye for now.
Mm. You're not supposed to eat podcasts, you're supposed to listen to them. But I get you. I get you, Mrs. I think you're being harsh on old Shula. And...
Yeah, I thought she did pretty well, actually.
Mm.
And it's difficult to give... It's difficult to give advice without... Well, no, she shouldn't have been giving advice. I suppose that's the point. But it's difficult to form an opinion when you feel like you don't know what's been going on, even though she's been told that she shouldn't know what's going on. And to be honest, that art project with those characters, who Kofi Annan couldn't have got them all on the same page. So, you know, I don't think Shula stood much chance, to be honest.
Mm, yeah, I think you're being harsh. And I'm not saying... it's not a kind of biblical metaphor to say that. I think we've seen the resurrection of the character of Saint Shula. But I'm liking this. And I like the change of gears that the archers can kind of go through. So we can have Jazza crying. We can have Shula contemplating her spirituality with the Bish. We can have Tracy Horobin being Tracy Horobin all within the same episode. Like, this is just like genius. So, but yeah, I think you've been harsh and off shoulder, but thank you for being a first time caller in. And also thank you for going through the gears. You went through the gears.
Yes.
You know, expertly. Like yep. You weren't a first-time caller-in-er, which is a bit of a silly thing to say, because only first-time caller-in-ers go through all the gears. But you know what I mean. Like, you were confident, you were clear, we know all about you. Well done. Even if we don't agree with what you've said. So, now it's B12 Simon.
Hello, Lucy and Royfield. This is B12 Simon calling from the heart of the Midlands. Just caught up on Thursday's episode, and as we've been talking about chemistry between various characters, what a brilliant scene that just was, Jakob and Kate having dinner together. They're two characters I don't really get on with. That's putting it a little mildly. Kate gets right on my tits. But that was a great scene, and I hope they get together, and I hope there's many, many more. Beautifully written, superbly acted. Well, thanks very much for the podcast. Hopefully I'll speak to you all again soon. Bye-bye now.
Well done there, Mr. Borsal Heath. I love Kate. She doesn't get on my tits. I love her. I think she's extremely well observed as a character. She's a comic character par none. Like, she's just brilliant. And on the odd occasion, she does show a little bit of growth. You know, Nola Tando. Remember that. Actually. She wasn't just this two-dimensional character which things just bounced off all the time. And we thought we were going to get this new reflective Kate because of what had happened to Nola Tando. And we did, at least for a bit. So she is capable of growth.
About 10 minutes. Yeah,
it was 10 minutes. And I like the fact that she's a bit of a man-eater. I love Kate. I love her. I love her.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want her to be a member of my family, but like, yeah, but if I'm listening to my favourite docudrama, bring on the Kates, I say.
I just can't imagine how, as a couple, they're going to get from where they are now to the shagging. But, I mean, that we'll just have to wait and see, and that's all about the development. But it's, the chemistry is weird. There's chemistry, but it's weird at the moment. I'm not sure how that's going to work, but we'll see.
So we have two somewhat outlandish characters, Yakult and Kate, and there is more going on there than there is with Kirsty and Philip.
Yeah, absolutely.
Much more.
But as we said last week, you know, Kirsty settled. Because she was hurt.
To be fair, you said that she'd settled.
Oh, sorry.
I didn't really comment. I don't have feelings on the matter because I gave them as a couple, not a jot. Right. So it's like water on a duck's back. However, just to prove that we are a team and we are inseparable, yes, that's what we said, Lucy. Yes, that was our official line. Now, it's another one of my favourite callers. I've got a lot this week, I tell you. But this one's special to my heart. And I believe she's in Kandy right now.
Hi everybody, it's Vicky Cole here calling from Kandy in the middle of Sri Lanka. It's a bit noisy with buses outside, so hopefully that won't be too distracting. Just finally caught up with the Archers and with Dumpty Dum. Royfield, I hope you're feeling a little bit happier this week. Lucy, I completely agree with you about hairdressers and masseuses being quiet. The Archers are all very draining at the moment, isn't it? I mean, it's brilliantly written, brilliantly acted, but it is just such sad listening. Obviously thinking of Jim and Jazza, Ed and Emma, and I'm finding the arguing between Clary and Susan very upsetting to listen to. People have predicted that what will bring them back together is the demise of Joe, but that's also going to be really sad. I've got some sort of slightly self-absorbed, self-centred plot predictions because it's how I think it's going to make me feel what's coming up. I think I'm going to feel really, really cross and grumpy with all this Conservation Trust nonsense. Kate and Jakob, if that's continued as a storyline. Sheila's autobiography. I just think it's going to be no fun at all. I can't envisage a situation where I would stop listening to the Archers, but I can begin to understand why people do. I just would like a bit more ordinariness and some happiness, you know? We're not hearing about anybody being very happy at the moment, are we? But go Neil. I mean, he was awesome. So that was good. That was good. Anyway, lots of love to everyone. Bye.
Bye.
It's funny, Vicky, that you go on and say there's no happiness, but then when a husband shouts at his wife and tells her to get a grip, you're like, go Neil. That was awesome, though.
I know what you mean. There's humour in, you know, Tracy and Linda is going to be an absolute riot. This quiz thing, my heart is sinking in preparation for that already. You know, there's a few things on the horizon that might be sort of amusing, but nobody is really having a nice life, because even though, like, Krusty's moved into her new house, we don't really believe that she's genuinely all that happy. So yeah, there isn't there's not much kind of you know, jollity and folderol going on, is there really?
Do you know Kandy used to be the capital of Sri Lanka?
No.
Yeah, just saying. I could go into map corner territory now, but I won't. I'm going to pull myself back loose and remember that I'm on a podcast.
Pull out, Royfield, pull out, yes.
You always leave a little something behind even when you pull out, don't you? But anyway. Sorry, everybody. But now it's that time where people go, I don't ever get adverts. And then some people say, well, they do. But it's that time where we break. I've already had my toilet break, actually. And unfortunately, I left the doors open. Lucy heard my tinkle. But maybe it's time for you to
listen to Royfield's tinkle.
No.
Oh.
Tap your partner. If you're in bed, tap your partner on the shoulder, right, whilst you listen to an advert, and just whisper into their ear, I love you. It's that time, folks.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Good day, everyone. Well, during the week, we had a really interesting and robust discussion about Jazza. We thought that what he did was about his needs and not about the needs of his pal. And we wondered if Jim would recover from this and also whether their friendship would survive. Jed Robinson said, yes, I do think that this is about Jazza's needs. However, and I say this with both having lived the experience of surviving abuse and as an explanation and not a defence of our Scottish friend's behaviour.
I still think that Jasmin may be a survivor of abuse also, and it would explain a lot of his reaction to the current situation and also his limited interaction with any friends or family from home. Unfortunately, transference is a common psychological phenomenon, particularly amongst people who have experienced trauma. Ruth Pellegrin said the way that Jazza had got so emotional in Friday's episode made her think that too. Pete Ranson said Jazza is always about his own needs. He's so self-centred it drives me nuts, particularly as everyone else seems to think he's the salt of the earth and he can do no wrong. He's not. He's this horrid little man who uses friendship as a cover for his own lack of self-esteem. Not a fan. Never have been. Never will be. Mind you, I did like his suit at Fallon's wedding. And then Alex Russell wrote, agreed, I sympathise with Jazza's struggle to handle this knowledge, but this is not his story to tell, and he is taking away Jim's control. He is pursuing this to try to handle his own feelings of anger rather than to help Jim or protect others. Speaking as someone who reported historical abuse and went through a five-year investigation into the school and a trial process, the idea that someone would use my trauma to take action on my behalf without my knowledge is unimaginable and unforgivable, however pure the intentions. It is a huge decision with far-reaching emotional repercussions, and as such, it is the victim's choice to make no matter what anyone else feels about it. Alex, thank you so much for your honesty, and I'm going to let you have the last word on that subject because I just think you wrote that so well. Just letting you know, we have 2,450 friends to play with on Facebook at the moment. So if another 50 people would like to join us, I would be able to say that we have 2,500. So if you'd like to join us, well, you know where we are. We also discussed the Shed Ed party and wondered whether it was a farewell or was it Tracy's clever device to get Emma to reconsider things. Stephen Bowden said, I think we're supposed to believe that Emma has suddenly realised that her pursuit of material things and social advancement, inherited from her ghastly mother, wasn't actually what she wanted and that really she'd be happy with Ed, even if they had to move into one of Tom's abandoned pig arcs. I'm not sure that's credible, although it would count as a win for Clary over Susan, which would be nice. Jan A. Mitchell said, I think it was Tracy's clever device to help Emma really feel her emotions and also to reconsider. Jean Bell said, if it showed her that he and the children were enough for her, it might be that Tracy was very clever. And Jed Robinson said, I'm just concerned about what she's got in mind for the Shed M party. Now, we ended the week discussing a magnificent Neil. And he was magnificent. But we wondered, will Susan take stock of what he says, or will this actually land up causing problems between them? Jane Wilson said, I hope Emma was listening and takes heed. Susan gets worse by the minute. The only time recently her human side has won out is when Will called Clary to say Poppy was in A&E. And Anne Stokes says, we know now from whom Emma gets her desperations and anxieties to be socially, upwardly mobile. Amy Sturley said, reading everyone's comments about Neil, I couldn't quite understand why everyone was so impressed. And then I realised that I hadn't finished listening to yesterday's episode. I went back and finished it, and thank goodness I did, because that was amazing. Thank you, Neil. You've made us all very happy, and we can't wait to hear Susan's reaction on Sunday. Jane Mitchell was standing up and cheering for Neil. He finally found his voice. As for him and Susan, I really don't know. Hopefully they'll have a chilly night real soon. Sue Scott enjoyed it so much she listened to it four times. And Teresa de Billet said, two Fridays in a row, I found myself shouting, oh, Susan, you got burned. Magnificent episode. And again, I think I'm going to let you have the last word on that, because that's an excellent way to end, because we know that sometimes Susan does need to be told. We also have a little poll going to see whether we agree with Lucy. When you go get a massage therapist, do you prefer someone to be quiet or do you agree with Royfield and prefer a chatty cat? I don't think Royfield is saying that everybody wants that. However, the general consensus would appear to be 93% say that we would like our therapist just to be quiet, please. And on that note, I shall love you and leave you. We did get a lovely photograph of someone wearing one of our Dumpty Dum t-shirts. So a shout out to Lydia Edwards, and we'd love some more. All pictures always brighten up our page, so please jump in. We'd like to hear from you. So just you can send them straight to us and we'll post them up for you. And other than that, I'll leave you in the very capable hands of Yogel Bear, and I will talk to you in a fortnight. So, hooroo!
Luce.
Thank you. Yes.
Sometimes I wonder if our wonderful listeners in Dumpty Dum Land are actually listening to the same podcast that we produce.
Because you didn't say, did you?
No, not at all. Right, and the amount of people all over Twitter and Facebook saying, I agree with Lucy, not uniform. I'm like, I didn't say that at all. All I was saying is that different types of massage sometimes require some level of feedback and or relaxation, of which the relaxation in part for some people can be that they talk. But like when for about the 50th time I got people saying, Royfield, I completely disagree with you and whatever, I'm like, wait a minute, I had to go on to our Facebook group, it's something which I hardly ever do, and say point
in
the
between
border
that
with
and
a spoon.
Boob gate, you remember
exactly.
It was a tough week,
oh
wasn't it, really?
God, it was. And I had to say point of order, I didn't at all endorse you know, people chatting with their therapists. I just said that some people do it, that's all. Anyway, it wouldn't be the first time I've been accused of something which I didn't do, Lucy, just saying. Now, how's about I calm down, and as part of my way of calming down, you give us some mirror headlines.
Okay, just one this week. Lotto winner denied £4 million scratch card payout, throws hot cauliflower cheese at Carvery boss.
Integral to that story.
They're not even in the weird news. They're not even in the weird news section. They're in the normal news. Anyway.
Hot cauliflower cheese. All right, hit us with some tweets, Mrs.
Lucy Saunders PR. Why do you want to be ordained? Well, I'm a saint already, so it looked like a natural move. Matt Underwood. I know I've said this before, but why has Clary never punched Susan? Henry Jenkins, Esquire. Tracy Horribin on reception. Did you want a room for the whole night, or is this just an afternoon bunk up? Becky Archer's Oatcake. What would the title of Shuna's autobiography be? Me, Myself, and I. Very good. And tweet of the week is Kerry Warbis. I can hear Neil's testicles growing. It's a low creaking sound, like the ship in Master and Commander.
That is good. That is very good. Well done, Miss Forbis. Well done indeed. Folks, it's time we start to round things up. But remember, before I go on any further, write us a review on iTunes and Apple Podcasts, because it helps us. It really does help us. Not, it's going to help charity, and you know, you get to see my arse or Lucy's assets or anything like that, or either Witherspoon's biceps or anything like that. But just go write a review. You know, if you like what we do, just write us a review. Go onto Apple Podcasts, write us that review, and in a few weeks' time, when we've got a certain amount of new, fresh ones, we'll do a roll call of people that have gone onto that platform and written us a review. So do that. And whilst you're on the interweb, why don't you go on to dumbydum.com, go book your tickets for the 9th of November. It's not only a live show, but also an award ceremony, folks. Oh, and thank you to the people on Flick, who on the Flick app, and I keep saying I'm going to put the link for this in the show notes, and I keep on forgetting, but there will be in this week's show notes. So thank you for those people who have started a thread, which is what the award categories should actually be. I don't know. Do you have a number of awards that we should give out, Lucy? A number of categories?
8.
All right. 8 it is. I like that. You said with such authority. So it's 8 because Lucy said so. So we need 8 categories. So go on to the Flick app and put your considerable brain power, collective brain power, to coming up with 8 categories so we can hand out mugs to the various maybe Dumpty Dum listeners or Archers actors that have won them. and that would be cool. And as I said, Tracy Horobin will be there to hand out the mugs. So it's Dumdy Dum Live on November the 9th. Don't forget it's Angela Barnes' birthday as well. So that's what you can do on dumdydum.com. Also, you can go there because we've also got a shop. And it's really nice. When I said, oh, people haven't really been buying stuff, we had a little uptick in sales. So that was greatly appreciated. Another way of supporting our podcast is you can go onto patreon.com for approximately $2 per episode. You support the show, and then it means you get the extras. You know, you
not
get
like
the grubby
Kate's
extras.
Extras.
Exactly. Like hence, extras. I said grubby. It's the grubby extras that you get, you know. And this month, you will get an interview with Charles Collingwood, who plays our Brian Aldridge. Next month, fingers crossed, you should get an interview with our Lucy and the actor that plays Ed Grundy. So,
Barry Farrand.
Yeah, I couldn't remember his surname is the reason why I said the actor that plays. But thank you for rescuing me, Lucy. So there is reason, if you needed any extra reason, to support this show financially. Now, Lucy, is there anything in red?
There is. Remember, to get in contact, you can send us a voice message via SpeakPipe on the website, or you can ring 0203 031 3105 to leave us a message.
And of course, on social media, specifically Twitter, you can find us where we are at Dumdy Dum, and that is kind of Yokel Bear in disguise, really. And of course, you can follow Yokel Bear, which I highly advise you to do if you're on Twitter. I can be found at Royfield, and Lucy can be found at
Lucy V. Freeman.
Woo! And of course, Facebook is where you get the social media roundup from, which is what our Millie Bell, the wonderful, cuddly Millie Bell, does alongside With a Spoon and Yokel Bear. And that's on Facebook. So just type in Dumdy Dum and you will get there. Now, Lucy, loads of feedback last week about West Midland Safari Park. people drifting off whilst listening to Dumdy Dum and then having nightmares about being eaten by lions. people saying, I love this podcast. There was a review that said, I love this podcast because you get Archer's chat and then you get chat about the Lion King, Makuna Matata, or whatever the heck that song's called, you know, right at the end.
Makuna Matata.
I don't know what the hell it's called. But
is it
well
Makuna
done.
Hakuna, whatever?
You're not even sure yourself.
No.
You know. You're not sure yourself, but you know what I mean.
Please anyway, don't feed the zebras. Move on to the next giraffe. Thank you.
Well done, you. Well done, you. So it's that point of the show where I ask you if you've got anything you want to talk about, Lucy.
I haven't this week. Only about the pooing in the pool, but I've already done that. Mm. I've already told you about that, really.
Yeah.
Yes, can't think of anything. Mm. No.
And remember, folks, I need some dog advice. I'm not going to get one just yet. Maybe at the end of the year. I need my visa status in the States needs to be properly all sorted. So I'll get my new visa and then I'll treat myself to a little pal. So we're going to have adventures. and on that note, I think we should draw the curtains on this podcast episode of Dumdy Dum.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.